sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. In May of this year, I was involved in putting on a conference in Santa Cruz, California, called Understanding Deep Politics. Today, Kevin, one of the other organizers of the conference, joins me in the studio. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Kevin, could you give us a little background on when you began to question the official conspiracy theory of 9/11?
I probably started questioning it around 2005, but I wanted to back up a little bit about how I didn't question it originally. When it happened in 2001, I was in a corporate sales job, and I was working probably 60-plus hours a week, and then I was doing a great deal of traveling around the West, and it was not really a question in my world. Nobody in the corporate world that I was exposed to was even bringing it up. They had originally given us all the answers we needed, Osama bin Laden, yada, yada, yada. The official story was just kind of just there and not questioned. So around 2005, I went to a seminar in Santa Rosa, California, and Barry Zwicker was on a panel with Webster Tarpley and a few others, and he had screened his movie that night of, I can't remember the exact name, but it was a movie called, The Greatest Story You Never Saw, and it was a mock documentary about a news story breaking the 9/11 lie myth. And I sat there, it was probably about 3 hours worth of talk and movie, and I said, you know, these guys are quite credible. And what they're saying makes a great deal of sense. So it took almost five years to even break into my consciousness that there might have been a problem. And I really either blame or congratulate Barry Zwicker that he was the man that put me on the road that I'm on now. But that was the beginning of it, that night in Santa Rosa, California, that I said, you know, these guys are making a lot of sense. And that movie was packed with all the questions that take away from the official story. So that was the beginning of the road.
And as you were learning more about 9/11, what else did you learn from your examination of the evidence?
Well, one of the main things overall was I learned what a false flag was, and I don't think I'd ever known that term before what it was, but the term false flag is key to this because the original was when, in olden days, let's say two ships would come together and there was a war on between the two ships, you'd have the ship that would attack the other would fly a flag. And the term false flag was they put up a flag of a foreign country, even though it was their own country. So that flag was false, and they would attack and then blame that foreign country that had absolutely nothing to do with it. So the term false flag is what 9/11 was, where we blamed, well, not even a country as per se, but a false enemy on that. And that's how false flag. And then when I kept researching, because 9/11 is like the beginning of research, really. It's not the end. It's the beginning of a travel down the rabbit hole, as they say. If you look back in time, you see that all major events in history are really virtual false flags, whereas the one recent before that was probably the Gulf of Tonkin, and McNamara himself has admitted and declassified information has shown that the Gulf of Tonkin actually never happened, and that was right after Kennedy's death. The Gulf of Tonkin was that event that they said that the North Vietnamese attacked our ships, and they never did. So that was a real turning point, and the Tonkin Gulf Resolution was signed by Johnson, and that escalated the war, and you know what happened, another 10 years worth of war, and 58,000 kids died over that, and based on a false event. And they always wait a long period of time. Usually several decades go by, but after that period of time has passed and enough death and enough time and people forget and it's a new generation comes in, then they admit it. So I'm afraid that that might happen with 9/11 too, where it's going to take a few more decades maybe. I don't know if we've got that time to wait. But the Gulf of Tonkin was a major false flag in American history. If you go back further, then you're going to find Pearl Harbor. That was a different kind of false flag, whereas it was true that the Japanese did the event, but the reality of it was we had broken the codes. And I believe it's been declassified that FDR knew about that in advance, and they positioned just enough troops, just enough ships in Hawaii, in Pearl Harbor, to actually have that happen. And it was, they call it a managed atrocity or a managed event, where it was approximately the same number of people died that day, and Pearl Harbor was about 3,000. So it seems to be their magic number. But again, Pearl Harbor was known about, could have been prevented, and since FDR had ran on telling moms in America that we will not enter the war because there was a lot of xenophobia about the World War II going on in America, and American mothers did not want their sons to go to Europe. And he ran on a strict platform of no involvement in World War II, so he needed a Pearl Harbor, and he got it. And we were at war the next day. So the term false flag was key in my discovering what 9/11 was, what the Gulf of Tonkin was, what Pearl Harbor was. And you can keep going backwards in history. Remember the Maine was another one. The instigation of the First World War was highly likely that. So every event, keep going backwards, you find a false flag at that point. Another event or non-event was an idea that was put together by the Joint Chiefs of Staff in the early 1960s when Kennedy was president. It was Leo Lemnitzer and the Joint Chiefs put together a document called Operation Northwoods. And this, again, was the plan for a false flag. They wanted to overthrow Castro, and it was drone planes, false markings on planes. They were going to dump a plane. They said that could have all the way gone to killing John Glenn and taking him out of orbit. So, I mean, this was a very extensive document written by the Joint Chiefs, signed off on all of them, and they really wanted to do it because Castro was the closest communist in the early 1960s to American shores. So Lemnitzer and the Joint Chiefs presented it to Kennedy, and he read this document around 1962, and he said, you know, what are you guys smoking? He couldn't believe what he was reading, a true false flag event to attack Cuba and to do it preemptively, using basically false flag attacking. And he did not. He was not down for that. He did not agree to it. And you know what happened to him about a year later? He was taken out. So that was a big one, Operation Northwoods. You can find it. It's declassified. You can Google it. And if we go full circle back to 9/11 being a false flag, this was written about prior to 9/11. There was a group called the Project for the New American Century, which was a group that was well into the 90s, and they released a document in 2000. That project was really the neocons, and it was a think tank with Jeb Bush was a signatory, Bill Kristol, who's still on Fox News today, Dick Cheney, the VP, Wolfowitz was on it, Richard Pearl was on it, and Don Rumsfeld. They all signed this document that was called Rebuilding America's Defenses, which was released in September 2000. That document actually called for a new Pearl Harbor. What they wanted to do with America was increase the amount of defense spending by a factor of several and make America the only superpower on the planet and take out the possibility of anybody coming to the point where it could de-seat America as the throne of the super hegemonic power across the planet. And they knew that America really wasn't on that. We did not have an enemy as we had through the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, which was the communist threat, that the Cold War, that was all gone. The wall came down. We didn't really have anything. So that they had written this. They knew what they wanted to do with America. They knew they wanted to spend a lot of money over this, create a huge hegemonic power across the planet. But America was not down for this. They would not be on board for it because of we just didn't have an enemy to make that happen. So this document, Rebuilding America's Defenses, that came out in the year 2000 in September, that was released and signed by all those people, said that the only way that they would be able to get this done is if there was a huge event in America, a catalyzing event, catastrophic and catalyzing, such as a new Pearl Harbor. And these people just don't get lucky. They know what they want. They know where they want to take us. That document also said that they wanted to go into the Middle East. They said they wanted to start in Afghanistan. They wanted to go from Afghanistan to Iraq. They wanted to go from Iraq to Iran. And they wanted to go from Iran into Syria. So there's what's happening right now. We immediately went into Afghanistan. Oh, and by the way, when September 11 came around, the troops were ready to go in Afghanistan on the 10th of September. There was a document sitting on Bush's desk that said, we are ready to attack Afghanistan. And then September 11th happened the following day, and they enacted these plans that were well, well honed many, many years really in advance. This was a false flag, and it was planned. And if you can go backwards in time and read what they were doing with the Project for New American Century, we are still going through this Project for New American Century. Even though we had hope and change, in reality, those wars have been escalated. We are apparently about to go into Iran, and this is that old document that was written through the 90s. In 2000, we are still living that agenda. It was Jefferson that said, if you've got an agenda going and you go through administrational changes, voting for this administration, that administration, if you still have the same agenda moving across all administrations, you've got tyranny. So we've got an agenda we're going through. The veneer of democracy is kind of, people are realizing that voting doesn't really make a difference anymore. And I'm thinking if you look backwards, it never really did make a difference. Bush never really even got elected. So we had voting fraud that brought him in. Gore actually won that election, the original one. Bush did not win it. He did not win the popular vote. They threw out all the Florida votes. I mean, all these events bring us to where we are. And it's quite the tapestry of the veneer of democracy tattering and showing through that we don't have one. But the big point is they needed that Pearl Harbor to get what they wanted done, and they got it.
Kevin, you were one of the organizers of the Understanding Deep Politics Conference in Santa Cruz, along with myself, that took place in May. What's your definition of deep politics?
Well, we took the term deep politics from Peter Dale Scott, who coined it, and deep politics refers backwards to really deep events. And when Peter Dale Scott did a lot of work on the Kennedy assassination, he called that a deep event, where it's so deep that the rabbit hole goes so far down that you will never get to the bottom of it. And that's the reality of it. I mean, Kennedy was shot in 1963. There's a lot of wink and nod about what happened and who did it. Was it one lone gunman, the magic bullet, all that. But the reality of that was an extremely deep event. And to this moment, we did not ever get to the bottom of it. So deep events, and 9/11 is another one. We have not gotten to the bottom of that. We probably never will get to the full bottom of that. But deep politics is along those lines where the politics is the veneer that we think we're voting. We think that we have a representational democracy. But in reality, there is a parallel, deeper reality simultaneously going on. And Carol Quigley wrote about that in Tragedy and Hope. He wrote that book in the 1960s. It's 1,000 pages. It's well worth the read. That he said then that parallel government, that deeper politic, that deeper level existed then, and it had existed for over 60 years. So in reality, the modern deep parallel government has existed now for well over 100 years. So we really haven't had democracy in that period of time. And it's becoming more and more apparent that we don't have it. We don't have a representational democracy. And this is huge because these are belief systems that we all need to really see through to see where we are today and then what can be done about it. And apparently we can't really vote it in or vote it out because there's a parallel system. And that runs through the think tanks, the non-governmental organizations, the
intelligence agencies.
Intelligence agencies are hugely part of this. Mm. Operation Mockingbird goes back to the 1950s, where they're involved in the media. So the media is really a tool of the state. Media means middle. And what that is the tool between government and the people. It's the media. So it's the medium that officials state what we should be thinking about. And the what we think about is actually of premier importance to the powers that be, and always has been. But Operation Mockingbird, you should look that up. That is a huge thing that Bill Paley in 1950 said, we own, and he came out of the military-industrial complex, he came out of the intelligence agencies, and in the 50s he said, we own the media. We own all the people of any importance in the media. So that's Operation Mockingbird. That has never ceased. That continues.
Another good book, I just want to jump in here, Kevin, another good book I think to read on this is Peter Dale Scott's The Road to 9/11. Is good on talking about the deeper politics going on. Now, we started out planning our conference in May. We were going to make it around 9/11, and it was your idea to broaden its scope. Can you tell us a bit about why you felt it was important to broaden it?
There was two things before that. The original conference was really challenging the war on terror. That was, we were working with Annie Michon, who was a former MI5 agent from Britain. And she came across false flags, and that's how she was a whistleblower way back when. And she wanted to challenge the war on terror. The committee wasn't really up for that. And then it morphed into just strictly a 9/11 conference. And I personally wasn't up for that because 9/11 is a huge event. It's extremely important to understand that in the context. But that in and of itself is not where I find it to be important. It's the context of why they did it, the ramifications of what's happening on the planet because of it. So if we wanted to have a conference that was specifically about that day, that's been done repeatedly. There are many videos out. There are many things talking about the evidence. Richard Gase is a great deal talking about the controlled demolition nature. Those buildings disappeared to dust in 10 seconds each, which really the law of physics was suspended. So, I mean, that the evidence of that event and that day has been exposed repeatedly and eloquently by many, many people. So I felt like we could really do a lot more justice and open more minds by broadening the scope outside of 9/11, more put it in a context. We ended up having 10 different speakers, some of which you're planning on to have on this radio station, which is fantastic.
Yeah, they've already heard Peter Dale Scott and Michael Parenti. Yeah.
Michael Parenti was excellent. Yeah. So 9/11 is important, but I feel like it has to be put into the context of why they did it, why it was done, what it means. And that's why I really wanted to make it a larger conference to talk about the media, to talk about false flags, to talk about historical reference, to talk about the powers that be. And that's what these speakers brought to the table.
I understand that you've also been studying the current economic crisis. What would you like our listeners to know about that?
Well, economics is a whole nother rabbit hole in and all of itself. The funny thing about this current economic crisis, the actual beginnings of it was late 2008, and it actually happened on September 11th, 2008. The first major event that began this crisis was the morning of 9/11/2008. There was a massive drawdown in the marketplace of at least $500 million between 9 and 11 on 9/11/2008. And the plunge protection team, which is a federal team that stops the market from plunging, pumped in huge amounts of money that day. So you can actually pinpoint the very, very beginning of this latest economic crisis right to 9/11. These people that do these events, they can't help themselves. They're occultists. They're all about these dates. The economics behind our society really is the fact that we deal with fiat money. And the Federal Reserve, it sounds federal, it sounds like a government agency, it isn't. It's not federal and there's no reserves, which is a huge understanding. The Federal Reserve notes are just created from literally nothing. There's no backing. The last time we had backing in it was Nixon took us off the gold standard, and what we've had since is the petrodollar. And that's part of why these wars are happening, is because one of the things that Saddam Hussein wanted to do was sell his oil in outside of dollars and sell them in euros, or at least a basket of currencies outside of the United States. So the petrodollar was eroding, and we had to do something about that, so we needed to attack Iraq. So the economics and the fact that the Federal Reserve creates money out of nothing is a huge, huge control factor. And once the Treasury asked for money, they literally created it out of nothing. They just have the right to do it. I think it was Lincoln actually wanted to stop that. Kennedy actually created dollars that were outside of the Federal Reserve system. And you know what happened to those two guys? They both got shot. So this is very important. The Federal Reserve needs to be audited. I think Ron Paul's done a great deal. But by the time these bills go through Congress, they get watered down and they really don't have any teeth in them. But the people of America need to know that the Federal Reserve is a private cartel of private banking. And then the entire system of banking is based on fractional reserve lending. So if you walk into a bank and you put in $1,000, that bank can go lend to your neighbor like a factor of nine. So if you put in $1,000, they can loan out about $9,000. And again, this is factored money. It's first created from nothing and then repeatedly increased from nothing. So the whole banking system itself is really just a massive, massive Ponzi scheme, massive fraud. And that needs to be understood. And these debts that America has, they're in the trillions and trillions of dollars. The amount of wealth that was transferred in the last couple of years was upwards of $27 trillion. Who's going to pay for that? Where's that money coming from? Who's it owed to? These are all major, major questions that we have to really say, you know, if this money didn't exist in the first place, what were they lending? And who's right to it? You know, and this is a global issue, too. The International Monetary Fund. Where's all this money coming from across the globe? It's like when Greece needs money, the IMF walks in and says, okay, here's $500 billion. Well, where is that? Is that real money or is it not? And in reality, it doesn't exist in the first place. And they just have the right to tell you that it's money. So this is a major, major control factor of humanity. And John Perkins has done a great deal of work. He wrote a book called Confessions of the Economic Hitmen. And that tells you how it works, where the moneyed system comes in. They make huge loans. The infrastructure of countries is created. But in reality, it's just companies like Halliburton make a ton of money, and Bechtel and those type of companies make a ton of money. And then the country that they've created infrastructure for, which really the public is outside of that anyways, these highways, the electric grids that are put in, the systems that are these major, major systems, the people of these countries don't really benefit from that. And the money never trickles down to the average citizen in these countries. And John Perkins has done a great deal. He's a huge whistleblower because he was on the front line of that and did it himself. So we need to really figure out the money system and to dismantle that, or at least to start making greenbacks like Lincoln and Kennedy wanted to do.
Yeah, and at our Understanding Deep Politics conference, Ellen Brown spoke, and she has a website called Web of Debt, I think it's .org, and you can go there, and she has a book for sale also that explains all of this. So if you want more information on that, that's a good place to go. Also, globalresearch.ca, the website, has a book there by Michelle Chusadovsky and others that detail what's going on with the economic piece. So I can recommend that to you also.
I believe you're going to have Ellen Brown's on this program.
Yeah, Ellen Brown, her speech at our conference, you'll be hearing that on a future show. So, Kevin, tell us a little bit about what motivates you to do what you do. Since you learned about 9/11 in 2005, you've been active in educating yourself more deeply and others and helping put on the conference. What motivates you?
Well, the motivation is interesting. The major wake-up call that happened in my life about 5 years ago was really 9/11 was a huge wake-up call. And that brought me into a whole sphere of new information that we've been talking about this half hour. But it's all about the waking up of the public, really. I mean, we've been under extreme mind control. We've been under an oligarch for well before we were all born. It's really a veneer of democracy. And the way I'm looking at it is it's much closer to totalitarianism. And what motivates me really is to do my little part in waking up the public, because that's where it rests in the public. The salvation of all this rests on the people. They need to participate. They need to educate themselves. They need to realize that the media is not there to educate them. It's really a tool of distraction. And it does a fantastic job. It gives you a certain amount of information, but it also ties in entertainment and Hollywood and movies and all this other stuff to distract you. So you end up in a surreal state of unknowinglessness. I think Peter Phillips said that at our conference. It's just a delirium that the public is in of unknowinglessness. And that it's important for us to individually break that out. So that's what I'm doing. I've individually broken myself out of that. And you need to figure this stuff out. You need to look at it for yourself. You need to make decisions for your own life. You need to move through the fear, too. It's like since this began well before we were born, it's going to keep going for a long time. You've got to separate yourself from an immediate outcome of what your actions are doing or not doing. It's not like that. It's a bigger picture. So move through the fear, and then once you've done that, there's a lot of emotions to all this information. You've just got to move through it somehow, some way. Then you're becoming empowered because you're not in that state of knowinglessness anymore. You're not surprised at what's going on. You can understand the context of why it's going on, how long it's been going on. These are huge things that you can do that really bring the individual back into power. And that's the only way that the power structure is going to change. It's in the individual. You can go to a rally and try to get a bunch of people together and everything, but these people that are making the decisions, they're not listening. They're bought and paid for by the corporations, Disney and ABC and MSNBC and these companies. GE owns NBC, so GE is making huge money off of the war, and they're not going to have their NBC outlets being so far against the war, turning the public against the war. It's just not going to happen because it's money motivated. So you've got to realize what you're looking at when you see the mainstream media. I don't even like the term mainstream because what we talk about is mainstream. This is kitchen table kind of level. That what they're showing you is corporate media. That's corporate owned, corporate dollars, corporate motivation, money motivation to put that in your mind that they're not going to put you against the war if GE owns NBC. That's just the way that works. And we've all got to realize that you're not going to stop that. It's always going to go on. It's always been there. They're losing market share. You know, CNN is way down. Fox is way down. These programs are not being watched like they used to be watched. And that's the only thing we can do is turn away. So when you turn away, you turn on a show like Cheryl's show here, and you're getting a huge education. It's a wake-up call. It really is for the individual to wake up themselves, and then once you're awoken, you can possibly wake up your neighbors, you can possibly wake up your family, but the important is that you need to wake up yourself, and you have to break out of the way they want you to think. And the Pentagon spends over $5 billion a year putting stories in the media all across. I think it's like 5,000 stories a year that they put in. It's like 10 a day or more, like 15 a day. Of stories to manipulate the minds of the public to make sure that they're on board with this war, to make sure that they think the status quo is okay. And the only way to do that is you are up to yourself to break yourself out of that. So that's my motivation, is like, I've done it to myself, and if I can say a few words on the air to hopefully bring the next person out, then the next person's out, then the next person's out, and that's when we'll get critical mass. But it's a one by one by one type of thing. It's not going to happen all of a sudden. It can't happen all of a sudden. You'd have total anarchy. And that's what we're looking for. We're looking for honesty. We're looking for our democracy back. We're looking for representation back. It's not a revolution that we're looking for. It's the hearts and minds, and that's their terms. But it's individual hearts and minds that need to understand where we are and look at it critically, with a critical eye, and move through it.
Kevin, thank you for being on the show and sharing your thought-provoking ideas with our listeners.
Thank you, Cheryl. Thank you very much.
You've just been listening to an interview with Kevin, who, along with myself, Jason King, and Gabriel Day, put on the Understanding Deep Politics Conference in May in Santa Cruz, California. Most of the video from the conference is now up on our website, understandingdeeppolitics.org. On the past few shows, I've been sharing with you some information on fusion centers. I'm going to conclude the show today with some examples of recent government surveillance of protected First Amendment activities. These come from an article called "Calling All Governors, Stop Spying on Ordinary Americans" by Carol Rose, and it was posted on the website boston.com on July 9th, 2010. So here's the first example. A May 7th, 2008 report prepared for the Department of Homeland Security entitled Universal Adversary Dynamic Threat Assessment labeled environmental organizations like the Sierra Club, the Humane Society, and the Audubon Society as mainstream organizations with known or possible links to eco-terrorism. The second example, in Maryland, staffers at the Chesapeake Climate Action Network, whose work focuses on clean energy technologies, were surprised to find themselves incorrectly included on a suspected terrorist list at their local fusion center. The Maryland State Police reportedly used undercover officers to infiltrate and spy on the Climate Action Network, as well as nonviolent peace activists, anti-death penalty groups, and members of Amnesty International. Identifying information as well as blatantly incorrect information about these activists was entered into the local fusion center and other government databases with labels such as terrorism, anti-government, according to documents obtained through an ACLU public records request. A third example. In California, animal rights rallies, environmental demonstrations, anti-war protests, student protests against military recruiting on campus, labor union organizing, and demonstrations against police brutality have all found their way into government databases at the California Anti-Terrorism Center, the California Office of Homeland Security, and the LA County Terrorist Early Warning Center. Fourth example, domestic spying on Americans also targets conservatives and libertarians. In Missouri, a report on the modern militia movement was leaked from the Missouri Information Analysis Center, the state's fusion center. It stated that militia members are usually supporters of presidential candidates Ron Paul, Chuck Baldwin, and Bob Barr, and instructed the Missouri police to be on the lookout for people displaying bumper stickers and paraphernalia associated with the Constitutional, Campaign for Liberty, and Libertarian parties. If government spying targets activists of all political stripes, then Americans of all political stripes have common ground to speak out against fusion centers and domestic surveillance. Both the ACLU and the Tea Party have come out in opposition to fusion centers after multiple instances of government surveillance of protected political activity. There are two fusion centers in Connecticut, one in Hartford at 25 Sigourney Street on the sixth floor, and one in New Haven at 600 State Street. It's also in the office of the FBI. And there's a number that you can call to reach, I guess, either fusion center, which is 203-777-6311. That's 203-777-6311. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.